Today at Reader's Corner, we talk to Juan Gabriel Vasquez, author of the new novel, The Shape of the Ruins. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. Our guest today is award-winning novelist Juan Gabriel Vasquez, whose newest novel, The Shape of the Ruins, was shortlisted for the 2019 Man Booker International Prize. When a man is arrested at a museum for attempting to steal the bullet-ridden suit of a murdered Colombian politician, few notice. But soon, this thwarted theft takes on greater meaning as it becomes a thread in a widening web of popular fixations with conspiracy theories, assassinations, and historical secrets. Juan Gabriel Vasquez's novels have been published in 28 languages worldwide. He joins us today by Skype, I think all the way from Colombia, but we'll find that out in a second. Juan Gabriel Vasquez, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
So are you calling us from Bogota?
No. In fact, I've been spending the last months in New York.
Oh, I see. Promoting a book, no doubt.
Well, the main pretext is a beautiful thing. It's a series of lectures that Barnard College, part of Columbia University, as you know, has come up with. I am the inaugural fellow, so for the last months I've been giving these lectures about, one of my current obsessions, the place of fiction in the time of fake news, post-truth, social media, and all these different kinds of news stories that are shaping our experience right now. So this is what I've been discussing in the last months here in New York.
So do you bring a Colombian experience with you regarding that? That is to say, are you dealing with the same kind of fake news challenges we are here in the United States?
Yes. The lectures try not to be just political. Of course, the political conversation and the way these new media have shaped our behavior as citizens has a lot to do with it. And, you know, within that, yes, I have my particular Colombian concerns because my country has been the present moment in my country has been turning around these peace agreements that effectively ended the war between the state and the Marxist guerrillas that had been going on for the last 50 years. And they have had a lot to do with how social media behaves and the lies and misinformations that take place there. But what I'm trying to discuss is what role or what place does literature hold in all this landscape? Because after all, these are stories, stories we are telling in social media, stories we are telling in Facebook, in Twitter, in whatever. And in this new universe of stories that we have been living in for the last, 10 years, what do novels do? You know, how do novels respond to what is going on in our heads as private individuals. So this is it.
So along those lines, maybe I can ask a question that I had buried somewhere in the middle of this interview. One of the things that's striking about your novel is that someone is in it that looks awfully much like Juan Gabriel Vasquez and acts like him and has the same literary career he has. Could you help our listeners understand, number one, what you did? You can do that way better than I can do it. And then secondly, why?
Yes, that's true. The narrator of the novel, the voice in charge of the telling, is a character called Juan Gabriel Vasquez, who basically shares all my biographical coordinates, and he has published the books that I have published. And at the beginning of the novel, he's going through a difficult moment because his twin girls are being born and they are very premature and they are going through all these troubles. And this is exactly what happened to me. The reason I chose this strategy of not inventing a character to tell the novel but rather telling it from my own real experience and my real point of view. Although it is a novel and it deals with fictitious characters as much as real ones, is that the novel was born at a very special time in my life, whose potency I didn't want to undermine. In the year 2005, while my twin daughters were being born, as I say, with all these complications, I met this surgeon, a very well-reputed Bogota surgeon, who, knowing about my fascination with a couple of crimes that hugely affected the Colombian 20th century, he invited me to his house. Now, these were the murders of Jorge Eliezer Gaitán, a liberal politician murdered in 1948, and Rafael Uribe Uribe, another politician murdered in 1914. These are important things historically in my country. So you can imagine my surprise when this guy invites me to his home and shows me some bones that belonged to both of these victims. So a part of the skull of Rafael Uribe Uribe, who was killed with blows to his head by unemployed carpenters, and then a part of the spine, a vertebra, that belonged to Jorge Eliezer Gaitán, with one of the holes of the bullets that killed him. So this is the beginning of the novel, and the anecdote seems so far-fetched, so unbelievable, that I thought I cannot make it something that a fictitious character tells, because there's a huge possibility that nobody will believe it. But if I tell it from my own point of view, speaking from the voice of Juan Gabriel Vázquez, maybe it will come across as more believable, and maybe people will believe that it actually happened to me, which was the case.
Well, it certainly is more believable to Americans reading this book, because it bears, one of the assassinations bears some resemblance to an assassination that occurred in this country. Why don't you explain how that fits and finds its way into your book?
Well, the book turns around conspiracies and these stories societies tell to try to explain conspiracies. The murder of Jorge Eliezer Gaitán is well known in Colombia. It's part of our national mythology. We all know who pulled the trigger. There was this assassin who was identified and immediately killed himself by a mob, by a furious mob. But the one thing we haven't been able to figure out was who sent the assassin, who were the intellectual authors of the murder. And we all agree that that something far more shadier than what has come down to us in history took place that year. Even if you don't believe in any kind of conspiracy theories, even if you don't have that mindset, you know in Colombia that the assassin didn't work alone, that there was something else. So the fact that this lone wolf was not alone at all, the fact that there are more shades than lights in the versions that we have inherited of this crime, the fact that the murderer was murdered himself as soon as he committed the crime, all these small characteristics of the event have made people in Colombia, historians, official or not, compare this crime to the murder of JFK in the United States. So much so that one of the people I interviewed to write the novel actually was a student, a very, very disciplined and dedicated student of the murder of JFK. And he dressed all these comparisons, all these parallels between the two murders that are just unavoidable, you know, when you try to tell that story. And so there's this character in my novel who, obsessed as he is with the shady side of history and with conspiracy theories, well, he takes that comparison into consideration, and that's part of the intrigue of the novel.
Well, it's absolutely a fascinating tale and a narrative. You're listening to Reader's Corner. My guest today is Juan Gabriel Vasquez, author of the new novel, The Shape of the Ruins. I wonder how, for you, it works as a Colombian author who makes a decision some years ago to leave the country. And I think I've read somewhere that it may indeed be in the grand tradition of Colombian authors who leave their country. You, I believe, spent most of your time in Spain, Barcelona, and then return. How does that play a role in the development of your fiction and in this particular book?
Well, yes, thank you for the question, because this is a very big part of how my books have developed. I left my country when I was 23, and yes, I was in a way following a Latin American tradition. All the writers in the Latin American tradition that I grew up admiring, Gabriel García Márquez in my country, the Peruvian Nobel Prize winner Mario Vargas Llosa, great Argentinian writer Julio Cortázar, and the Carlos Fuentes from Mexico. All of those great voices that left a very strong footprint in my own evolution as a writer wrote from abroad, but about their own countries. So the Latin American tradition has this very strange characteristic in that the best Colombian novel was written in Mexico, and the best Mexican novel was written in Washington, and the best Peruvian novel was written in Paris, etc., etc. So I was following that in a way. I felt the need that so many Latin American novelists have felt of stepping away from the material, as it were, from looking at our countries from a distance and trying to understand them better from a distance. To me, this reinforced my obsessions. It was another way, or let's say it stressed the fact that this thing that I thought I knew, my country, was in reality full of dark places, full of secrets and mysteries. I think the same thing happens to anybody who consider the history of their country long enough. You begin to understand that all those things you thought you knew are in fact uncertainties, that our personal histories, in the sense that they belong to the history of the country, are full of shadows, full of mysteries and secrets. And then writing novels has been the way I have found to deal with these secrets and mysteries of Colombian history, and to try to tell these stories that can speak to the same feeling in readers all over the world. This feeling that you really don't know the place you come from. This feeling that history does not always tell the full version, and that it falls on us, the citizens, to try to discover or to uncover the truth behind our national experience.
Did you write this novel after you had returned to Colombia?
Well, this is the only one that I have written from the first page to the last in Colombia after going back. So I spent 16 years abroad, first in Paris, then a little stint in Belgium, very strange months in Belgium. And then I arrived in Barcelona, and I stayed for 13 years in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. I went back to Colombia in 2012, and then I began writing The Shape of the Ruins. So it's the first novel I write next door to my characters, so to speak. Feeling that the kind of psychological pressure that a country such as mine can have on writers. And it turned out it was a very interesting moment to write this novel in, because this is a novel about violence and about the way we inherit violence from past generations, a novel about the ways past crimes can shape our present lives. And I wrote it at the same time as these negotiations were going on in my country. They began in 2012, almost as soon as I arrived in the country. And so I wrote a novel about violence in a moment in which my whole country was trying to end 50 years of violence. And I think that seeped into the book somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder, speaking of what seeped into the book somehow, in 2016, Juan Manuel Santos was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for the role he played in ending the civil war that went on for 50 years or whatever it was. And you're in the middle, or maybe even close to the end of writing your novel. Does that influence the novelist? And I might want to put this in, or take this out, or adjust this here.
Yes, I do think, in a way, the general emotional state of the country shaped the novel I was writing. We were, as you say, ending a 4-year-long negotiation with the signature of a peace agreement, but that wasn't the whole story. After that, a referendum was passed to approve or reject the agreements, and they were eventually rejected by a margin of 50,000 votes in a country of 40 million people. So this was a setback and a difficult thing to accept for me, because I've always supported the peace agreements. And we realized that part of the reason of the defeats was only part, but a very important part, was the success the opposition to the agreements had had in telling false stories about what the agreements were about and about what the consequences of the agreements were. So while I was writing a novel about false stories, about conspiracy theories, about historical lies, the same thing was going outside, you know, of my writing studio in my country. Mm-hmm. A very big debate about the stories we tell to try to understand life and how vulnerable they are to misrepresentations and lies.
By the way, I forgot to mention that Juan Manuel Santos was the president of Colombia at the time. That's one of the reasons why he was given the Nobel Peace Prize, because he led those efforts to bring the parties together and seek this agreement.
Yes, of course.
So I have to ask you about the fact that you mentioned this. You mentioned his name earlier, but Gabriel Garcia Marquez, obviously internationally famous author. You have oftentimes been mentioned as the next Marquez. I'm sure that's flattering, but I wonder, is it in any way constrictive? Is it in any way hem you in a little bit where, hey, look, I'm my own guy here?
Well, you know, mentioning me as the next Garcia Marquez is its own way of magical realism. You know, it's a huge exaggeration. What I can say is that two things are true about my relationship with the works of Garcia Marquez. 100 Years of Solitude, by the way, is not only one of my favorite novels, but objectively one of the most influential books of the last century.
Yes.
I can quote writers in the US, in Europe, in Africa, in Australia, in China, like Mo Yan, Nobel Prize winner in literature, who all say that the biggest influence they got was 100 Years of Solitude, the reading of that novel at some point in their lives. So we're dealing with this kind of influence. And what I can say is that the work of Garcia Marquez put Colombian literature on the map. And it shaped the way Latin America was perceived by generations of readers. But it couldn't be more distant from my own preoccupations as a novelist. So as a novelist, what you try to do is take these obsessions, these demons, as Mario Vargas Llosa says somewhere, and turn them into literature. To do that, you have to try to find a method. And the method of Garcia Marquez was suited for his own obsessions and his own demons, growing up in the Caribbean coast, in Colombia, in a certain kind of society, in a very small town of you know, 5,000, 10,000 people in the 30s and early 40s, while I grew up in a capital of 8 million people, rather at the end of the century, with very different obsessions, a very different imaginative relationship to my surroundings and to the history of my country. So obviously my method had to be different. I couldn't use magical realism to talk about my very down-to-earth experience of the life in my city and my relationship with history. So other novelists have been more influential to me as a novelist, although García Márquez has played a very big part in my development as a reader and in my relationship to the vocation of writing novels.
I'm Bob Custer, host of Reader's Corner. Today I'm talking with Juan Gabriel Vasquez, author of the new novel, The Shape of the Ruins. The novel explores the darkest moments of a country's past and brings to life the ways in which past violence shapes our present lives. So I'm going to ask you a question you might not get that often. I read your novel in English, obviously. That's the only language I could read it in, unfortunately. Anne McLean, a Canadian, translated your novel into English, as she has done with your previous novels, and she won the International Dublin Literary Award for her translation of your book, The Sound of Things Falling. I'm just curious, as I read your novel and other novels that have been translated, how do authors and translators work? Are they completely independent of one another? You write it and she translates it 3 years later, or how many months later? Or does she check in with you regularly about questions regarding how to handle a particular line, paragraph, or section of the book? In the end, of course, her work has much to do or something to do with the quality of your work as it's read by someone in whatever language it's been translated.
Well, it has everything to do.
Yeah.
Translation is a very strange phenomenon when one looks at it closely, because what we're reading is a book where the only thing that made it possible in the first place is not there anymore, which is the writer's words. So we have grown used to this idea that is very strange when you look at it. I can say that my worldview has been shaped by, I don't know, Greek philosophers and Russian novelists, and I don't read a word or speak a word of either Greek or Russian. And the same goes for literature. So what happens to me is that my relationship with Anne McLean is different from my relationship with almost any other translator, because English is a language that I speak and that I love, that I'm interested in. So we have a very close relationship in terms of trying to get to the best final draft possible. We change things together. There are sentences in which the literal renditions would make them sound clunky or not as good as they would sound with a little change here and there. And so we work together on that, and we try to produce a text that eventually is as much mine as hers, which is not the case, for instance, when a book of mine is translated into Chinese or Arabic or Hebrew, the languages that I cannot even interpret. You know, I cannot even read the words. It's a very beautiful process, and I'm very lucky that I have Anne, who is a virtuoso of translation, to convey my novels to English-speaking readers.
I want to go back to the beginning of our conversation when you told us what you're doing at Columbia University in the Barnard College, that is addressing the role of the novel in this era of fake news, and I might add what has become a very vulgar standoff between warring political camps, whether you're in America or whether you're in Eastern Europe or wherever. And I'm in the middle of your book, actually not quite the middle, but I'm in your book at a section where the narrator is talking about a column that he had published and decides to share with the readers what he thinks of this would be journalism, not so much the novel. But he says, I'm going to read this is these are your words, but out of the profound conviction that they displayed the worst vices of our new digital societies, intellectual irresponsibility, proud mediocrity, implausible denigration with impunity, but most of all, verbal terrorism, the schoolyard bullying that the participants got involved in with incomprehensible enthusiasm, the cowardice of all those aggressors who used pseudonyms to vilify but would never repeat their insults out loud. Oftentimes I ask novelists if they have a message in the writing of their novel that they're trying to portray beyond the beauty of the literary experience. And I guess I would say I think I found in your novel one place where you may be speaking for yourself here.
Yes, yes, that is true. I do agree with the narrator of the novel in this particular subject. Yes, this is something that I have been worrying about for many years. The way that social media, the possibilities of social media have degraded, really, our conversations as citizens, our relationships as citizens, with very, very strong political consequences, but also personal. I think what social media allow has brought out the worst in us. And that very nasty sides that have until now remained in the internet probably are manifesting themselves in let's call it real life, in our political behavior, in the way we vote, in the way we choose our representatives, but also in a certain diminishing of empathy and tolerance, and you know the good regard we could have for our neighbor, for the other. There was an extraordinary book in these recent years by Jaron Lanier, one of the pioneers of virtual reality in Silicon Valley, who is calling for a deep citizen activism that tries to change the internet, he's calling for people to close social media, because that's probably the only way to force the people at Silicon Valley to invent a new model of social media that doesn't feed off our worst impulses and our intolerance and our lack of empathy and some you know, the deep resentments and hatreds that almost every human being tries successfully to suppress. So these things come out in this new reality that we have invented. And I think they're having dangerous consequences in the real world.
So what was the name of do you have the name of that author? I mean, the name of the book? You gave us the name of the author.
Yeah, the author is Jaron Lanier, and the name of the book is 10 Arguments for Closing Your Social Media Right Now. Yeah, it's not subtle.
Okay. So, final question, and I thank you so much for the time you've given us today. So, this was your 7th novel, The Shape of the Ruins. What's next? Do you take some time before you figure that out, or are you already writing?
No, I'm a compulsive writer. I never stop. Part of the reason why I never stop writing is that it takes me so long to write a novel. Between, you know, the conception of the book, of the general idea, and then the research, and then the actual writing, that by the time any one of my books is published, the following idea is already there. It's reasonably well formed. So right now I'm trying to begin to write a novel about a real person who, for the first time in my experience as a novelist, is a friend of mine. He is a film director in Colombia who has this extraordinary life. He's about 70 right now. But when he was a teenager, his family, this is 1960, 61, his family took him to communist China because his father had been hired as a Spanish professor. And in those very difficult years in China, the years of the Cultural Revolution, etc., he went from being a child to becoming an adult with all these political implications for his own ideas. And so the stories he tells about those years there are fascinating. And this is what I'm trying to turn into a novel.
We look most forward to that, Juan Gabriel Vasquez. Thank you so much for joining us today at Reader's Corner. The name of the novel, The Shape of the Ruins. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.